and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts in Astoria and the Lower Columbia region. I'm your host, Marianne Monson. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. What motivates writers to do the work they do, and what do they learn through their creative process? I'm excited to have with me in the studio today Astoria-based Cliff Taylor, who is a Ponca writer, poet, and storyteller. He is the author of The Memory of Souls and the poetry collection The Native Who Never Left. Welcome to the studio, Cliff.
Thank you, Marianne. I'm really happy to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. We had you not too long ago for a reading at the Salty Siren Bookstore. And it's really a pleasure to talk with you again.
Thank you.
So, you are originally from Nebraska. Can you talk a little bit about your origin story?
Sure. Now that I've been away from Nebraska for 8 years, I like to say that I lived on planet Nebraska for 34 years. So, I'm kind of filled to the brim with the essence of Nebraska, for better and for worse. And so I grew up in a small town, Columbus, Nebraska, population 18,000, and wasn't exactly what my little, young, art-loving self wanted, wasn't exactly what all of my little, young art-loving buddies wanted, but I feel like it blessed us in a lot of ways, because sometimes when you don't get what you want, you dive even more fully into what you already have. So it really, in a kind of almost backwards, unintentional way, encouraged us to really dive into our art and our love of art. And so, yeah, I grew up in that town. And I was kind of primarily a visual artist, and I kind of evolved and wanted to be a comic book artist. I wanted to make horror movies. And then when I was in high school, I'd always been a reader. I'm the son of a librarian, the grandson of a high school history teacher, the grandson of a high school English teacher. So always been a reader, always been a voracious lover of books and reader of books and eater of books. And in high school, something just kind of clicked, and I really kind of switched tracks from visual artist to being a writer, and I just couldn't get enough of it. And that's probably actually the true planet I've been on ever since, the kind of writer planet. And went to college, didn't exactly vibe or jibe with everything in college, but really loved the town that I went to, Lincoln, Nebraska, and kind of felt like a Shangri-La compared to kind of the dusty middle of nowhere hometown that I was previously in. And started writing my tail off for many years, wrote short stories. That was kind of what I was about. I loved the feelings, the thoughts, the experiences, the stuff that you could kind of craft into a short story. And my kind of world that was known so much to me, but maybe known, or at least according to my perception, known so little to the world outside of me, could have big, vibrant life in these short stories. So the medicine of self-expression was a huge part of why I wrote so many and got so much out of it. And then in my mid-20s, I took a memoir class at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. And for the first time, I applied that fiction writing skill set to telling my own story and telling my people's story. And that's pretty much what I've been doing ever since. And so that was when I was 25. I'm now 42. So I've been kind of on, for the most part, I still write some fiction, a nonfiction path of kind of telling the stories of myself, my family, my tribe, Ponca Tribe of Nebraska, but also, you know, the indigenous people here of Turtle Island who have gone who have had their story unarticulated on a kind of larger mainstream scale for painfully too long.
Thank you. Wow, that's quite a journey that you've been on for quite some time. Can you talk a little bit about how eventually you found yourself in Astoria?
Yeah, it was the weirdest, kind of most unexpected thing. My partner and I, we've been here for half a decade as of Fisher Poets Weekend, which was, I think, 2 weekends ago.
Uh-huh.
That's when we got here. Mm. And we were previously in New Orleans. And basically, we did a long cross-country road trip with all of our earthly belongings packed into our Subaru. And I was in Seattle for a while, and my partner before New Orleans was in Chicago, and basically we wanted to come to the Pacific Northwest. We had no idea where, but in the 2.5 months that we were on the road, all of the conversations started kind of pinpointing Astoria. All the people we went and visited, all of our respective family and friends, and had like this epic, you know, catching up with all the people who were no longer in our physical vicinity by visiting them on our way out here. And the conversations just kind of kept centering Astoria. And my partner had never been to Astoria. I'd never been to Astoria. We knew nothing about it. We just knew it was a smaller town surrounded by tons of nature in the Pacific Northwest. And those were probably the three things at the top of our criteria list for where we wanted to go post-New Orleans. Mm. And we got here, and we have just totally loved it. It's been an incredibly encouraging, supportive place. And my partner, who is very eloquent, says that when we got here, this place has held us and helped us kind of have the conditions we need to really do what we want to do with our lives, instead of just being caught up in the hustle, caught up in the struggle, and having, you know, our life purpose on the back burner. So we've loved it here.
That's wonderful. That's amazing. And I found on your website where you'd written a poem a little bit about that. So apparently one of your first days in town, you ran into a friend who you didn't know lived here, who was from Nebraska, right?
Yeah.
In an amazing serendipity.
I will totally tell that story too.
It's go ahead.
So, I mean, that's a testament to the magic of a story, and probably the stuff that keeps so many people here in such a good, committed, loving way. I think it was our first day here, and we were getting a $5 lunch at a spot downtown, and our vehicle was packed to the gills, parked by the sidewalk, and I was stepping outside for a second, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw someone walking up towards me. And I could tell they weren't walking past me, but they were coming directly to me with intent. Like, in the periphery, I could feel that. And so I kind of turned, and it was I'm 6'2", it was a taller than me, a tall tattooed character with glasses. And I didn't know, you know, why is a stranger approaching me? I'm a stranger in a town where, you know, I don't know anybody, nobody knows me here. And in that second, when I turned around, the person said, "Cliff?" And my mind was just totally blown that anybody could know my name, because I didn't know anybody here in town. And then in the next half second, in the next ultra slow motion half second, I recognized the physicality of the gentleman in front of me. And I was like, "Ken?" And it was a gentleman that I went to high school with back in the 90s. We graduated from Columbus High School in 1999 together. And it turned out it was our friend Ken at Busu. And neither of us had seen each other since the 90s in over 20 years. We weren't friends on Facebook. We had no idea that we were both here. And he just happened to see me, and he recognized me after not seeing me for 20 years. And then he basically gave me this big, beautiful, hug-filled welcome to what he called the most beautiful place on earth. And so for the rest of the day, after traveling across the country and spending all our resources and arriving in a place we'd never been and wondering, did we actually come to the right place? I was greeted from a person, by a person from my past in the most coolest way. And I felt like that was my sign. Like, I felt like Astoria was using my old friend Ken as an instrument to let me slash my us know that you have arrived in the right place and all is well and thanks for coming. And the subsequent 5 years has just been kind of almost like an elaboration on the magic of that moment. It has been really great here for us. And rock on to Ken. Patronize Ken. He's the coolest dude.
Busso has some fantastic food.
Yes.
But okay, so I love that story. It's fantastic. And I'm going to read the lines from that poem that you wrote. So you said, "My ancient past had sent a messenger to welcome us to our freshest chapter, to shake our hand in the middle of this great unknown. We'd been delivered to the right stretch of earth. We were drinking our coffee right where we were meant to. Miraculously, we'd arrived." I love that.
And so do I. I haven't heard that. I haven't read that poem since I wrote it 5 years ago. So
oh, well, good.
I love catching those last couple lines too.
Yeah. There is something just amazing about this land that I think calls people here and kind of calls the people who are meant to be here at a certain time. So glad you are among them, Cliff.
Me too.
We're so glad to have your beautiful words contributing to the literary arts of this region. Okay, speaking of which, do you want to read us a poem? You've got a new poetry collection out. Well, I don't know how, when did it come out?
It came out May of last year.
Okay, so yeah, newish.
Edging still. Towards the no. 1 year mark.
Yeah,
edging
yeah.
towards it.
It's still a baby.
Yeah.
All right. So read us a poem from The Native Who Never Left.
Okay, I'm going to read the title poem. The Native Who Never Left. Put me in a grocery cart and ghost ride me down the street. Film it and live stream it. I can already tell you I won't crash. I'll coast and burn and rattle and roar. I'll howl and sprout wings and glow and summon spirits. I'll blaze with indigenous grace and mutate into a goonie and fly over the pavement like a holy creature from one of our Ponca stories. I'll become an image of wild-faced ecstatic resistance and a patch Native kids will wear on their jackets and a silhouette to replace the end of the trail Indian. I'll become the Native who never left, and I'll make sure the whole world knows that as long as the earth sings her sweet love song to the crackling sun, we Natives will be here to stay.
Hmm. Thank you. That is beautiful. So I want to ask you, and I think it seems relevant, especially to that poem, what are some of the misperceptions about Native peoples that you want your writing to help confront?
The biggest misperception about Native people that almost the majority of the American populace has is that we're not here, we're gone. We're a thing of the past, we're a non-entity, and we don't exist. Luckily, we're living in a time now where because of social media, because of changing attitudes, because of history-making events like the Stand for Water and Standing Rock, there are all sorts of powerful, inspired, creative Natives working in all fields to make our people heard, make our people visible, and share our big, beautiful story with their respective communities, with the country, with the world. And we're basically reversing that curse of invisibility that was put on us a long time ago, where it just helped the cause of America to remove Native people culturally, physically, in every way possible. And it's cool to be living in this time where you're watching all of that, we'll say, mass misperception melt away. And as it melts away, people are becoming happy because they see that we are embodiments and practitioners and representatives of beautiful culture, culture that is about the earth, culture that's about the waters, culture that's about humanity and song and ceremony and story and all this stuff that deep down everybody has a basic, spirited, beautiful connection with. And I think that deep down all people yearn to be in, to wrap around their shoulders like a beautiful blanket and have a closer relationship with themselves. So, yeah, and I'm the first person to ever write and publish a book of my tribe. So for a long time, you know, as the son of a librarian, all of us Poncas, when we go to the libraries and, you know, we're raised in typical Western education schools and we learn that you get knowledge from books. So if you want to learn about something, go to your local library, go to your school's library. And we're Ponca through and through. And so we go on that little quest to get a book about being Ponca, and there are none. And so I wanted to change that. And so I wrote these books for everybody, native and non-native, for all the, especially for all the native people, and especially for all the young native people, and a super especially for my own tribe and my own people, so that now every single Ponca that decides to go on that quest to their local library or online to order a book or see if there's a book, that quest has a piece. I just saw there's like an opera about King Arthur here, so this is where this is going to come from. It has a piece of that Holy Grail, the Holy Grail of resources to help me know myself, to increase my self-knowledge, to increase knowledge of my kind of deep, beautiful tribal identity. Now there are books out there, and that quest has a an attainable whole piece of the Holy Grail there. Because I want the young people to live a different and better story than what I found myself in when I was a kid in the 80s in Nebraska. And I want them to know that they can do what they dream of doing, that they don't have to conform to models and stereotypes that are prescribed paths for them to live down to, but they can live up to their most beautiful dreams that they are carrying, you know, from their ancestors that are kind of sending them down like love letters from heaven into the mailbox of their heart.
I like the metaphor. For those of you who are just joining us, this is Marianne Monson for KMUN's River Writers, sponsored by the Writers Guild. This morning, I am I'm speaking with poet and Ponca poet Cliff Taylor. So so thank you for what you were just saying. That was just so beautifully articulated. I was just sitting there being so glad that we have this recorded for others to listen to as well. And I think related to that, I want to bring up that, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Ponca tribe is similar to the Chinook tribe here in terms of that neither of them have currently have federal recognition. Is that correct?
Not totally correct, but I'm so glad you brought this up. When I moved here, I got to meet with, chat with, and connect with members of the Chinook tribe, and they have been infinitely generous in opening their world and sharing some of their stuff with me. Just and whenever I get to be around them and hang out with them, I feel like I'm home, you know, capital H home. And like the Chinook tribe, there was a period, my tribe in the 60s was eliminated as a federally recognized tribe, which is kind of I want to say a farce, but even more so, almost like pouring salt on the wound. It is an atrocity for, you know, the government to just declare you no longer exist. Mm-hmm. And then the hundreds of you who do physically exist, you have this giant, beautiful, multi-generational family, and you're told you don't exist anymore. So there was 442 of us on the tribal enrollment sheets when we were eliminated as a federally recognized tribe in the early 60s. And it was painful. Mm. I mean, I, in the early 2000s, when the internet was kind of becoming more available, I did some research and I found a newspaper article from my dad's hometown in Norfolk, Nebraska, where my uncle was quoted as saying, when I was a kid, the other Indian kids would ask me, what kind of Indian are you? And I would say, I'm Ponca. And they would say, I've never heard of that kind of Indian. And he said, that hurt me. So conditions were set up with that elimination to cause more pain. The point was to cause enough pain that we'd want to forget ourselves. Well, that's never going to happen. So all of my relatives banded together. And long story short, in 1990, we got our federal recognition back, and it was signed in by George Bush Sr. So we have been a federally recognized tribe since 1990, and we're going to have our 30th annual powwow, I think, this coming year. Mm-hmm. And so the Chinook people are, as in my humble understanding, are in a similar situation. They're fighting to get their recognition back. It's to use the word ridiculous isn't enough, but I believe they're going to get it back because truth and justice wins, and the power of the people, both native and non-native, is immense, and that power it always gravitates towards and is always geared towards ultimately truth and justice, at least in my kind of worldview. So, yeah.
It reminds me of that quote by Martin Luther King. It says approximately the same thing. So you're in good company.
All right.
That the moral arc of the universe is long, but it tends towards justice is my rough paraphrase.
I love it, and I
believe
that.
Yeah, me too. And I really love what you said about how it is essential for Native people who went through so much, obviously, in the, you know, during the quote-unquote settlement era. But it is so essential for all of us because there's this emptiness and a yearning that we all have to connect to the land and to connect to deeper meaning and purpose that usually is housed in indigenous and a lot of times in female ways of knowing that have been marginalized and pushed aside and buried and outright, you know, been attempted to be eliminated for centuries, right?
Utterly agree. Utterly agree.
Okay, so another quote that I found on your website that I really loved, you said in 2020, I think this wasn't is the case for a lot of Poncas and other Indians today. We know we are one, but that's about it. We're like this garden bed in stasis, packed full of a million unique cultural and spiritual seeds, more underground than flowering, more potential than brilliant, ravishing ecosystem. Like the action figure still in the package, gathering dust in a drawer in the attic. That's how it was for me, at least. I was still waiting to come out of storage. So I think you've answered this to some extent, but I wanted to ask you, like, what were some of the elements that helped you to step out of storage, to step into that space and to become the ravishing ecosystem?
That comes from my essay, What Being Ponca Means to Me, which is the first essay in an essay collection that North Dakota State University is going to put out later this summer.
Oh,
which
wonderful.
Is titled The Shining Hands of My Ponca Ancestors.
Hmm.
And, you know, when I was 21, I kind of stumbled into or was pulled into by some twist of fate or piece of leprechaun luck or by some pure ancestor love, I found myself kind of among my people's traditional ways, you know, the sweat lodge, the sun dance, our ceremonies. And I just got to be in a place where we were all totally saturated by our pre-Columbian traditional culture, where people spoke the language that existed before America. And I got to hang out with elders. I got to kind of hang out with all kinds of Poncas and natives who were super passionate about reviving traditional culture, traditional spirituality, and traditional understandings of the world. And I just got so steeped in that, that it helped me discover how to, I want to say, water the seeds of my own tribal identity. And then when you see the seeds sprout and flower, the flowers are so beautiful, it inspires you to want to be a part of this movement of helping others learn how to water their own seeds too, so that all of the flowers, all the original flowers of our tribes and our people can be present in this story right here and right now again.
I love that. I feel like that was kind of a mic drop moment, but we shall carry on for a few more minutes. Cliff, where can people find your books?
Locally, you can find them all sorts of places. You can find them at the co-op, where I'm a friendly neighborhood cashier. You can find them at Godfather's Books, at Gathered Bake Shop, at the Salty Siren Bookstore. You can also find them online in the ways that we all find stuff online. Google Cliff Taylor, The Memory of Souls, my memoir, or The Native Who Never Left, my poetry collection, and you shall be guided to a place where you can then have it sent to your home mailbox. And I got two more books coming out this year, and I'm just really excited to be living the life that I always dreamed of when I was the writer kid back in the 90s. It took a long time, but sometimes the best stuff takes the longest time. So
absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the new books or what you're working on now. It sounds like those books have gone to press, possibly, but...
I'm really energized, we'll say. I have this kind of hybrid poetry memoir, Acts of Indigenous Imagination book called The Notes of an Indigenous Futurist that's going to be coming out later this year. We haven't pinpointed when. It's with a small press. And then I have The Shining Hands of My Ponca Ancestors, which is this big essay collection completely about everything you've heard me talking about today. I mean, they're just continuing to dive into all of this delicious stuff. The essay collection talks about my people's corn. It talks about the Sundance. It talks about, you know, how we find these people in our lives that become pivotal friends, pivotal mentors, pivotal elders. It talks about, you know, all the kind of challenges and difficulties of unburying, as you were saying, unburying the best stuff of yourself in these kind of times that are a lot of times kind of encouraging you to keep that stuff buried, keep your indigenous identity buried, keep your divine feminine power buried, you know, don't upset the status quo. Both of these books are about upsetting the status quo for the greatest good of all humanity.
Can't get much better than that. Oh my gosh. Cliff, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you today. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit promoting literary arts and writers in the Lower Columbia region. You can learn more by visiting thewritersguild.org. Until next time, keep the words flowing and your pencil sharp. I'm Marianne Monson for River Writers.